Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dear Diary, it's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century, from I Love Lucy to News Radio, and I'm your TV guy, Brett Wyatt, and I'm also a reporter producer for Decider.com. This is episode number 108 over the course of like 4 years, so I'm about like, I don't know, 92 off pace, but whatever! This week I'm joined by Meredith Hackman.
Hi!
And Rob Sturd!
Hi. Hello.
Hi, what's up? How's it going?
But
has everyone else been returning? I think y'all are the first firsties for the podcast.
We're the first firsties? No one else has ever done this?
Everyone else that I've talked to in the last four episodes, I think, are all they're all return guests. So,
oh. Wow.
So I have not gotten to ask y'all, how's your quarantine? How's your COVID?
We're crushing it, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've learned a lot about myself for a worldwide pandemic. Like, I've really gone within myself and realized how little I need, like, friends and social interaction.
Fuck all those hoes.
Like, they've been holding me back. I should have just been a hermit all this time.
Haters to the left.
And Rob, how you doing?
I have been swinging rapidly between insane and productive.
Oh, wow. I know that. I know them.
Yeah, what a year. What a literal, like, 14 months. What a literal 14 months of our lives that we will never get back, and that we're all just going to move forward as if it never happened, and we're not going to get any reparations of any sort.
Well, I also think it's interesting because there are perks to this that we're not acknowledging because it's been such a nightmare. But, like, a year from now, it'll be interesting to see what we miss about quarantine. Because
This whole past year has exposed, is there a bug? I don't know. It has exposed the, like,
it's trying to record its podcast.
It's exposed its
at the same time.
The bleeding entrails of our broken carcass of a capitalistic country have just been exposed. Of just, like, doctors aren't paid enough, teachers aren't paid enough. We have too many lies and conspiracy theories that are killing people. We should, like, be able to work from home more if we have to. Childcare should be, like, it has just, like, all of our problems have all just been shoved into the spotlight. And if shit doesn't, yeah, it is great. If things change, like, it is, like, we all, I mean, I firmly believe every single American deserves $20,000. Period.
I don't. I think we should all be slaves to corporations.
I say, like, well, when you look at other countries that were giving everyone $2,000 a month.
Oh, yeah.
And we've been at this for 14 months. And it's like, well, where's the dollars? We were like, tax the shit out of billionaires and trillionaires because they deserve it. And then also relieve student debt and institute a universal basic income. Jesus Christ.
Well, I've been focused mainly on the people complaining that there's just not enough jobs. There's not enough jobs. No one, like, the economy. And it's like, well, actually, there's tons of jobs that could be made and could be happening, but the people at the top refuse to create them or fill those needs or pay people. really, who are on the front line.
What is it? Money is an illusion, people. Not to sound like I just smoked a bowl, but
guys, I thought this was a podcast about TV shows, not a podcast for communists.
Well, I think it was quite a communist. I think she would agree.
Yes. My favorite episode. So, Craig Rowan's old podcast, It's That Episode, which was kind of like this, except it was any TV show of any sort. He had Charlie Sanders on to talk about, I don't remember what show, but the conversation quickly turned into Charlie Sanders interrogating Craig of like, why are you doing this? Why are you podcasting? Like, what do you get out of this? Do you make money?
Like,
for an hour. What?
Are you begging us to question you and force you to come to terms with why this is happening?
No, I already know this is pointless. Yeah, no, this is I'm a lost cause. I'm interrogating myself every day. So yeah. Sorry. No,
we're not. By the way, listeners, we're not even here. This is Brett alone in a room.
I'm really good with voices. Oh boy. But anyway, thanks, listeners, for just sticking it out. So listeners, when I get the second vax and go outside again for the first time in 14 months, who knows? Maybe the podcast will become lucid. But it's been off the rails for a while now. Anyway, this week we're traveling to September 15th, 1965. Once a Thief rolled the box office, Help by the Beatles topped the charts, and ABC aired the Gidget episode, Dear Diary et al? Et al? What would you say?
Et al.
Et al.
Et al? Robin Meredith, you must have seen Dear Diary et al before today. Have you?
Yeah. We watched it for the podcast, right?
But have you before?
I've seen it before today. I actually went down a deep Gidget hole. I don't know, probably my early 20s, and it followed quickly by a Flying Nun hole.
Oh, wow. Because she had the back-to-back Screen Gems hits.
Well,
this was not a hit. Flying Nun wasn't.
No. But I found out that the reason why the Flying Nun even exists, I don't know if you found this in your research, but is because Gidget was canceled because no one liked it after a season, and then the viewership found it over the summer and it became like a big hit, but ABC refused to admit that they made a mistake canceling it, and so instead they just decided to find a new vehicle. And they created the Flying Nun.
So, like, you go from bland, like, I'm a 15 and a half year old girl who loves surfing, to I'm a nun that flies. Like, same show.
But here's the thing. When you look at how they stacked it up, they put it up again in the same time slot as the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah, which is the number, like it's huge.
Yeah, and it's also just like, that's clearly not the time slot for this show. This show was for teenage girls. And I was saying it'd be like if Sex and the City was put up against The Simpsons, then I'd be like, I can't believe it didn't succeed. Because nobody who's watching TV at that time is looking for Sex in the City.
Yeah.
That's why it has a different time slot.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've
turning
never
40.
Jeez, God, time is meaningless.
Our are slowly fading out of.
So I'll talk about this right now, because I usually say it at the end of the podcast and people might have stopped listening by that point. I do have 5 1-star ratings on iTunes. I have like 40 something 5-star. So, like, of course, I'm focused on the 1-star ones. Listeners, are openings like the one I just made you listen to the reason why some people give me 1-stars? And if so, fuck them, right?
Fuck them. I think we should, you know, do a revenge plot against them.
No, I think my new bit is anyone that gives me 1-star is either QAnon or homophobic.
That's good. Actually, that's a good thing to label them with.
It's okay. It's fine. Leave reviews. Write them out. I like the ones that are written. And then also leave me 5 stars, please. Then also, I'm going to keep doing this no matter what. So whatever. Anyway, my history with Gidget is none. I knew it exists because, like, it is a pop culture touchstone.
None was the other show, Brett.
I'm also not familiar with Flying Nun either. But, like, Gidget is, like, an archetype. Like, how you would say someone's, like, an Urkel, you would say someone is, like, a Gidget. Or, like, it's a kind of thing that you would say. I feel like there are sitcoms or I don't know if this ever happened, but, like, it seems like something that, like, Spike on Buffy would, like, look at Buffy and be like, oh, calm down, Gidget. Like, he would use it as, like, a pejorative to mean, like, you're just a yapping, like teen girl. You know?
Well, dead on perfect, Spike.
He wasn't British either.
But yeah, I think you probably did call her Gidget. I mean, it's like a tiny lady with a lot of sass.
Yeah, I've never watched it. And so it was quite a delight. This week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the Gidget episode, Dear Diary et al. It is the first episode of season one. It's the pilot, baby. And it was written by Ruth Brooks Flippin and directed by William Asher. Here's how Tubi describes the episode. Gidget Lawrence, 15 and a half years old, falls in love with Jeff, a college student, and takes up surfing to be with him. Robin Meredith, how accurate is that description?
Not that accurate. And that actually puts to something I found out in my research, which is that she was supposed to do a lot of surfing, but Sally Field lied in the audition and didn't know how to surf at all. So people commented in reviews being like, there's like no surfing in this show.
One star, no surfing. One star, talks too much about politics. Wow, that, I mean, like, hey, but like, get it.
If get you, it.
Get it, get it, get that role.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But also, I wasn't even what the movie was about. Like, Jeff and her are not involved, and she doesn't learn how to surf during this episode. This all happened in the past, right? Like, they're just.
It's more like whoever wrote the description watched the first 30 seconds and heard her opening monologue and was like, okay, cool, that's done. Moving on to Gidget episode two. Like,
well, episode one is very strange, too, because I found out that it was supposed to be 30 minutes long, but they cut it down to the 22 minutes that we saw. Apparently you can find it on like the original DVD release. They had the full 30 minutes, but it makes me wonder if there's like giant things that they cut out from it. And that's
a lot
why
more with the husband,
Meredith even said this when we were watching, she's like, the show moves so fast. And I'm like, it probably wasn't supposed to move this fast. They cut out like giant scenes that would make it seem, you know, more connective.
Yeah. We haven't even talked about, like, Gidget is a... It was probably a big deal when a Gidget TV show was happening, because she'd already been in three movies. There were three. What's her name? Ruth Brooks Flippin wrote two of them. She didn't write the first one, but she wrote, Gidget Goes Hawaiian and Gidget Goes to Rome. She wrote those two. Anytime I see a woman's name on the writing credit of a sitcom from the 60s, I am like, trailblazer, what is your deal? Where'd you go? Because like, if you read the Mary Tyler Moore book that just came out a couple years ago, like James L. Brooks and, oh my God, who's the other person that co-created? You know what? If I put pressure on myself, I'm not going to remember it. But anyway, Alan,
Brett, set yourself up so later on you can insert it. Be like, you know, it was created by James L. Brooks and
Alan Burns. Alan Burns, yeah. James L. Brooks. If I Google it, what happens? Jesus Christ, I am so sorry. Yeah, it's them. When the two of them created the Mary Tyler Moore Show, they were like, well, obviously we are two 30-something men. We need women to write this show. And they essentially kind of launched the equivalent of a casting call for just writers. They were like, if you are a woman who writes comedy, they found the one who wasn't Ruth Brooks Philpin, but they found like the one that had credits, and they were like, okay, cool. You're like the lead writer. Come over, please. Then they were like, women, if a woman submitted, like some women submitted like handwritten like specs, and they were like, if there were jokes there, they hired them. They would even be like, this is not formatted in any discernible way. It makes no, like, but good character work. So you're hired. And they staffed the show with all of these women who are first time writers who no one else would have ever hired them because they did not know the rules that only men tell each other of, like, hey, you indent this much if you're talking about a bit of dialogue, you know, like, and so like it is super cool that she wrote this, and then after this, she goes on to write 55 episodes of That Girl, which is a great show. So that's cool.
It's really cool. It's a very, I mean, Rob stopped, like, paused it in the middle of us watching the first time and was just like, this is kind of like forward thinking, right?
Uh-huh.
It was like, yeah, it's
forward thinking in a weird way. There's a ton of mixed messages in this show. It's very obvious that there's like a lot of like conflicting voices in that writer's room, and in the producers.
It's also clear that a woman is leading the charge in the writer. Like, there's definitely external stuff that's forcing the hand of this show, but the lead female character, she gave me Blossom vibes. Like, I was definitely getting a lot of one-to-one.
So, like, when the episode started, again, having never seen any of the Gidget movies and never another Gidget show, the show starts with Sally Field looking at the camera and telling you what her deal is. She's like, I fell in love with a guy over the summer. I learned how to surf on the same day, best day of my life. He's leaving to go back to school in the fall. And the entire time I'm like, this is Clarissa Explains It All. This is Blossom. This is Freaks and Geeks. This is Square Pegs. It is My So-Called Life. Like, it, and it's 1965.
It's crazy.
And that, I don't know. Honestly, watching this episode felt like I had discovered something massive. Like, this massive part of television history that never gets talked about or the respect that it deserves. Because, again, teenagers weren't, like, catered to at the time. Like, they had beach movies and, like, the Beatles. Yeah.
And something that's speaking to, like, a teenage girl going through, like, changes in her life. And a big thing for me about this show is it was super freaking sexual. And it was like, and I just rewatched the Gidget movie. I forgot I had watched it the first time, so I rewatched it. And the feminism in that is so much more 50s. Like, the message at the end of that is they look at a sample that the grandma, you know, sewed or whatever. And it says, a real woman is one that brings out the best in a man.
Hey, hey.
Right? But it's a great movie. I highly recommend the movie.
Oh, yeah.
But that's like the end, like the morality of it is that she's still like a tomboy. She's still like a yappy, whatever. Like, she's got a lot of spunk and she's going to do whatever she wants to do. But her realization is that she doesn't need to be as sexual as her friends. Like, she just wants a real relationship. Whereas this Gidget is just like, well, forget about Jeff. Like, I want to date around.
Yes.
I want to be great. It's very 60s sexual revolution.
But that's where you guys are painting it like that's how it is. She was completely like, it's an insane, it's like listening to an insane person, because everything is about sex, sex, sex. And then it's like, she's never even kissed someone before. It does, none
she's
of it.
She's 15 and a half.
Yeah, and they're like, but they like clearly, like this episode, it's the big like kerfuffle is she writes, I sank into nothingness.
Which is a euphemism for kissing.
Which is euphemism for kissing.
Is it?
Well, at the end,
she's like, I haven't kissed anyone.
But it's very clear that it's supposed to be that they're not freaking out because she may have kissed someone. They're freaking out because it's supposed to be like
sex, orgasm,
like she had sex.
Yeah,
and that's why like the jokes are supposed to be like her when her and her dad are like confused about what each other is talking about.
Yeah.
Like, well, it's not like it's a moral issue, and the dad's like, it is a moral issue, you know, and it's like, and
it's probably because they could not actually, they definitely could not actually have it be sex. But like, so the episode opens with her talking to the camera, and then it goes into the theme song, which is again like cute photos of Gidget being cute all over the place. And then her dad, who is a handsome, well-dressed man. I love all of the clothes he is wearing in this episode. The theme song keeps like the refrain is like, Gidget is mine.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that, like, right, doesn't that track with everything we're seeing? It's like everything is, she's allowed to be promiscuous and funny and sassy, but well, like fake promiscuous. I don't know what this, it's like, it doesn't make sense.
She's liberated, Rob.
Yes. No, I think that it makes sense for like this is the internal life of a 15-year-old that is still living in 1965, I think is... The theme song seems to be coming from, like, the dad's point of view. But
yeah.
But even I was very impressed with the dad because, like...
Brett, I mean, you're really just... like, the dad was so you. Like, as soon as I saw that open, where it was just a montage of him in different hats, like, placed jauntily on his head.
Yeah, he was like making faces and stuff.
Like the dad.
I loved him. Because, again, he was emotionally... sensitive to her. Like, he wasn't just like, oh, girls, I don't understand, like, which is how it usually goes.
He was so much more available to her emotionally than the sister or the brother-in-law. I mean, he was really on her level. He was letting her kind of do her thing.
Yeah. So, like, the dad is an English professor at UCLA. Again, the opening, the monologue tells you all this stuff, which is like, the mom died. It's like, here's our exposition. Mom is dead. Dad is a professor. Sister is
Dookie.
A neurotic busybody who is married to a guy that's going to school to be a psychiatrist or psychologist, but they all say he's a first class nut, but is he? He just seemed boring.
He's doing a Dick York impression.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what was happening for me.
Yeah, it just seems like they were all shitting on him for no reason. I don't know, which I think is kind of funny.
Well, I also like that they're shitting on the sister who she literally says, this is my sister, Anne. Like, she's a crazy nutball because our mom died and she had to take over the role of mother. And I was like, maybe give her a little bit of credit. She's really trying to take care of you.
I like the dynamic, because I'm imagining that the sister's probably like 20. So like 2021, if her husband is still in college and like. That seems to make sense.
Yeah.
Because, like, 5 years is a normal amount of time between children.
Sure. But also, Gidget is dating someone that was significantly older than her. I mean, that was really troublesome.
That is, that does not age well.
No. However, in the movie version, which took place 6 years before, she was 16, going on 17, turned 17 in the movie, and her college boyfriend, Moondoggy, is like, you're way too young for me. So I like that they made her younger and then didn't deal with the fact that she was too young.
Yeah, it is weird. But he's gone to Princeton, so like, lock it down, I guess. But the first scene of the episodes are all like waiting up for Gidget. And the dad is the only one that like is fine with her being out past 11.
Well, yeah, she deserves to be out past 11. He's very supportive. He knows she's not up to no good. He knows she's not going around kissing boys. She's just driving in cars.
Were we... Okay, who amongst us had the most trouble with curfew?
Not Meredith. Meredith didn't go out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, you went out? I'm trying to look
up that. Robert, come on. You're the Gidget in this situation, for sure.
I definitely, my Gidget is not as fun as the TV
as
show.
Gidget. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
my parents and I didn't have this amicable relationship where my dad would come in and give me like friendly advice right before I go to bed.
Yeah. You know, he doesn't care. The sister cares more about the curfew and he's like, it's fine. Like she's coming. Like he trusts her. I do love when Gidget comes home, she's like, the night was mildly tragic. Gidget's entire character is so 15. Like, being a teenager sucks. It's horrible. And I like how much this show gets it.
I don't think she thinks it's horrible.
But she thinks that when you're a teenager, you think everything is like, way more of a big deal than it is. And so therefore that is horrible.
For sure. But I like, and that's why we are a big LaRue household, Gidget's friend LaRue, because she's like, you're having a terrible night because your 19-year-old Princeton boyfriend, like, it, like might want to marry you. Like what are you talking about? Like, what are your problems? Like, I'm definitely more Team LaRue.
Yeah. I did think like that the central conflict of this episode of like, it is where like she wants to keep dating while he goes away to Princeton, but she doesn't want him to keep dating.
But she doesn't want to date either. In the second episode, she's like, she just wants, that's what I'm saying. Like the show is about like the clearly like the times, like clearly the show was created being like, well, what if Gidget, you know, was not, you know, cause at this point, this would be a modern, they would have been considered to be doing a modern take on a movie that came out. I think the last one came out like 5 years before this TV show or something.
Yeah. I mean, the movie started the beach genre, which is like,
that's what I want to point out. What's crazy about the show is the whole premise of it. Like if you go back to the books, which inspired the movies, is basically like, wow, this girl is surfing. That's so crazy. Let's create like a giant franchise off of this concept. It just shows like how insane it was that like a girl might like independently enjoy a sport.
Do anything.
Would do anything.
This girl chose to do something. What? Make a show.
I got to tell you, we hear 100 ideas a day here at CBS, and this girl on a surfboard blows my mind.
Girl rides bike. Wow, 5-season order.
Girl rides bike.
But I guess, like, I do. There is like, you know, TV at this time still had not found that, like, oh, maybe we should be. What's the word? Consistent across episodes. Like,
but it makes sense, right? Like, what's so funny is the show got canceled, but I bet it got 60 million viewers a night. You know what I mean?
Like, I think it got like 26.
Yeah, whatever. 26 million.
Which is a lot more, or something like that. Yeah.
Make it like double the most popular shows that are out today. And you just turned on your TV and whatever was on was on. So, consistency. You know, you're trying to win people with every episode.
Yeah, it's like, what's going to get them this week? More people want Gidget to, like, want to be, like, date one guy or pine after one dude? Cool. But next week, double dates are the fad. So maybe she should go, like, they just...
But I also want to say that, like, you guys are acting like, oh, this was so long ago. Like, we don't have these problems with TV in modern times. Like,
oh, yeah.
My childhood television watching experience was like girls doing girl things. Like, oh, one girl is kind of good in school. Wacky. Yeah. Like, that was the 90s.
Yeah. Things have not changed.
Clarissa explains it all. What if a girl was like smart?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like things have not changed. I think this episode of television is mind-blowingly progressive for like.
I think it's progressive in
what
weird
it was
way.
Doing in 1965 is. I can't believe they put that on television.
This show is the horniest show I've ever seen, and I mean that. I mean, even compared to any of.
Have you watched Too Hot to Handle?
No,
on Netflix.
I've not watched Too Hot to Handle. Is that the horniest show?
It's pretty horny.
The whole premise is try not to be horny.
Like, this show is horny in a like uncomfortable way. Like I was pointing out that there's a moment where the son-in-law goes, "Is Gidget overeating? Because that's a sign of sexual starvation." And the dad goes, "Well, she's not overeating as much as you."
Yeah.
And I'm like, the dad just goes, "You're hornier than my daughter."
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Sick burn from the dad. I love this dad. His dad is like, fuck my son-in-law. I'm going to humiliate him.
Who's horny in this house? It's you, John. You horny bastard.
This is why I'm seeing a sister. Like, the sister is getting beaten up on her poor husband. They come over all the time to help take care of Gidget, help take care of her father. And they're like, get out of our house. Yeah. We don't like you or respect you.
So like now Gidget's like up in her room and she's allowed it. She's doing what a teen girl does. She's writing in that diary. But Gidget, like her diary is basically like Tina Belcher's friend fiction.
Yeah.
She says later at the end of the episode that she's like, see, this is dated Thursday. That's tomorrow. I I say what I want to happen. And she writes about sinking into nothingness and like kissing Jeff, and like she's like, I mean, she's like,
you're because I'm like, I don't know who that was for. Like, I don't think anybody at the time saw Sink into Nothingness and had a clear idea why that was upset. I can't imagine that like translated.
Well, I don't know. Like, who knows? The slang of the 60s. I should do a newspaper search for that.
I tried looking it up, and the only reference to it is
this. So it does seem like
I think anyone who watched the show, whether it was back in 1965 or obviously now.
Oh, I had no idea.
Why would you be this upset if you think that it's kissing? It doesn't make sense. Like, you could be
I think it's all network notes. I honestly, I could.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
it feels like the network wouldn't let them do what they wanted to.
But that's why I think this show swings so wildly in so many crazy directions. Like, I couldn't get a read on the actual show. I watched 3 episodes of it, and each one I felt like like a fever dream, because the emotions swing wildly. You're like, I mean, we can talk about it later, but her crying was insane.
But that's, that is a teenager. I fully do think this is an incredibly painfully accurate depiction of teenagers, of being a teenager when the teenager is the point of view character.
Yeah,
right.
Because like, this is all through her point of view, and so of course she's crying, she's kissing, she's not surfing because she lied, you know? So, which at the time, like, I'm trying to think, like, listeners, you just listened to last week's episode where we talked about Leave It to Beaver, which that episode aired 6 years before this. Fucking Wally Cleaver in that episode goes and gets one of the worst haircuts I've ever seen in my life. And he's like, oh, I got a haircut. And then basically like the entire episode is the mom being like to her husband, tell him to cut his hair. It is awful. And he's like, no, let him, you know, kids will be kids. Let him have it. It's fine. And then finally in the episode, she finally like snaps on him and is like, do you know how, you know, when your little brother wore my flower hat to Sunday school and you, well, how'd you feel? And he was like, I was embarrassed. And she's like, that's how your hair makes us feel. We're embarrassed of you. And then he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, mom. I guess I'll get it cut. And then he's like, dad, next time I act like a creep, tell me. And then that's the episode. That's the moral of the episode, is that be embarrassed of your family and fucking make sure they know. And so, like, if Wally was Gidget, he would be in hysterics and he would be like, absolutely not. This is my hair forever. Like, he would be a little
crazier.
Yeah. So if that is like what people are thinking that teens are, Gidget comes along and she's like, no, we sink into nothingness. But then the sister walks in, because of course she does. And Gidget's on the phone. She's on the phone with Jeff, yeah. Right? And she goes, she's like, oh, doesn't she say something? Oh, like, her sister's like, I want to talk to you. And then Gidget says, like, some other time. This is an awfully busy year, dear.
Hey, yeah.
That's such
sister. I think that is a good line.
It's a great line.
They had great lines, and there were some really funny parts in it. Some of the jokes really hit, but like I said, like, I was constantly like, what am I watching? I have no I understand what you're saying, that it's like in the mind of a teenager, but it's
a horrible place to be.
No, because it's like that makes sense if it's a drama, but like, we're watching what's supposed to be like it went up against the Beverly Hillbillies. Like,
I think that is to its detriment, because like, it was too good. Like, it was too weird. It was
That's what they found out, that when teenage girls got out of school in the summer, the ratings skyrocketed when they had reruns, and it was like,
yeah,
you know, we just like, why would we ever put this up in this like family TV hour? This is clearly, you know, yeah. I mean, I think that part, and then I think the fact that they probably were approaching it with network notes, like you said,
of like.
wait, this is family TV hour. Like, yeah, we can't sink into nothing. This has to be a kiss.
And it's, you know that Ruth flips Brooke or whatever was just like, I don't know what that means. And they're like, yes, exactly. That is the point. Sink into nothing. Yeah. And like,
all right.
Okay. Cool.
Paycheck.
So she breaks up with Jeff from the closet, but then she's immediately like, I need to see him again. I have to have a reason to go to the beach. Like, what? And so, and also simultaneously, the sister.
I do think you're right there. Like, that stuff is super teenager-y. The like
bitch, I was doing that in my early 20s.
Well, just like, but just like the crazy statement of like, well, that's it, we're done. And then immediately being like, all right, so how do I get him back?
Yeah. So also the sister has found the diary's on the floor. It got knocked over. And she picks up and she reads it, which is just like boundaries.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Respect them.
Yeah.
Respect them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What is happening, Brett?
What? Brett. I mean, someone read Brett's diary. That's Brett, like, getting, like, deep in the fugue state of a memory.
Absolutely. So now Gidget's on the phone with her friend, and this friend is amazing. When the friend shows up, because they're like, we're going to the beach, you're my excuse, the friend pulls up in her pretty dope ride, and she says that she's allergic to the sun.
I mean, this is the best joke out of the three episodes.
Well, and then Gidget's like, that's the least of my problems. Which is great. But I also want to say, this was a Screen Gems show. It was directed by William Asher, who was also like the main director of Bewitched. And then Ruth, the writer of this episode, went on to do like 30 episodes of Bewitched. And they also did Flying Nun, and they did I Dream of Jeannie. And now, like, no shade to those shows. I love Bewitched. I am literally writing a book about I Dream of Jeannie, so I can talk about it. Gidget is the only one of those that has actual hard jokes with a weird point of view that made me laugh. Like, I will chuckle at a Bewitched, or I'll be like, oh, I appreciate what they're doing, but I don't think Bewitched has ever made me actually like laugh out loud. It's just entertaining. But that friend coming up there with like a backseat full of like hats and umbrellas and stuff, and she's wearing a rainbow like parka, and she says, "I'm allergic to the sun." Is a weird, great choice.
It's That's beautiful. My spiel. There's still people that are allergic to the sun.
Yeah, but like having that be the plot point, and then later when she puts on the hat, oh boy. So they go to the beach. This is where I also noted, like, bikini shots. Like, this is, like, there's some beach party. Everyone but Sally Field. She's not going. Sally Field's not going to that water. No. Could she swim?
No, she's allergic to water.
Oh! What a bad choice for them to go to the beach. Allergic to water, allergic to sun.
I do love the great green screen scenes or blue screen scenes that they had with her, like, pretending to surf. And it was like, it's just, I don't know. I love that they could never show a wide shot because it was all.
But that's what they did in the movie, too. That was like, that's the aesthetic of Gidget. They do like close up, like clearly. On the surfboard. They're on a big surfboard.
Are they having conversations on the surfboard?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're like sticking tongues out at each other and like having a little rough housing.
Because I feel like you're not going to have a prolonged conversation on a surfboard.
No. They have like long interactions on a surfboard, and then they can clearly hear each other, and then she faints when he says she's good looking or something. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, that's true. He said, you're not even that bad looking, which I have had someone say to me. Not a compliment.
And Sally Field is.
It's not a compliment.
Sally Field is like one of the best actors of all time.
Adorable.
I have to say, this is one of the worst faintings I've ever seen. It's in the beginning of the episode if you want to see.
Oh, he says, I guess you are kind of cute.
And then she goes like, oh, but I was like, cute. It's like,
honestly,
so does the like faint part, but then clearly like whatever setup they had for her to fall on clearly made her nervous enough where she had to like I clearly looked down.
She's afraid of falling. You said on your resume that you were a professional faller. You were not, not afraid of falling. So she points out Jeff, and this is where I felt fever dreamish, because the show shows us Jeff, like all the other teens, are in their bathing suits, like surfing, running around, playing volleyball, dancing, grooving, and Jeff is sitting on the sand, cross-legged, playing a recorder, or like a flute, like a little, like...
Looking sad. Well, because the assumption is he's just so bummed about losing.
But I was like, so he's a loser? Like, that's like, who the hell takes a wind instrument to the beach? And it turns out he was a beautiful blonde bombshell was on the other side of the surfboard he was sitting next to, and her hand was under it, and she was pretending to be a snake coming out of a whatever.
A classic game boys and girls play.
Oh, yeah, they're having a good time.
Apparently.
Order, you want to be a snake hand?
You want to play snake hand?
So then Gidget's like, we're going in. And the friend puts on a hat that they certainly had to make for this scene. I cannot imagine that a hat like that is viable on the market.
Incredible prop. I mean, it really is. Yeah.
The brim is, it's like a wicker hat, like a wicker, like kind of like sun hat kind of thing. And it is, the brim covers her upper body. Like, it is so long. I wrote that she looks like she's an alien on Tatooine. Like, that get-up of, like, the weird, like, robe and her, like, weird head. She's just, like, waddling along. Yeah. Wait, do they even interact with him?
No.
No, because she sees the woman who first. Again, the show has so many things that we're just making guesses that we know what they mean. She calls the woman cornbread, and at first I'm like, oh, that's a bad thing.
No.
And then it means what?
It means she's thick. It means that she eats, so her boobs are big.
Wait, really?
The whole thing is about how big the blonde woman's tits are. Because then Gidget goes home and she starts doing the breast exercises, which Rob did not know were breast exercises.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, she's squeezing her hands like this, which was like a thing in the 60s they told girls to do to make their boobies bigger. And it doesn't work, I guess.
So cornbread is thick.
I think cornbread is... my assumption is like... farm fresh, like she's got
Stinking to nothingness. It means holding hands.
The more I'm learning, I love this show. I love that they worked in doing breast augmentation exercises, because 100% all of the censors were men and they had no idea what that was. I didn't.
The fact that neither of you knew what it was.
Teen girl watching that at the time would be like, yes, yes, work, yes. Gidget. My experience.
I heard something interesting. I like read some reviews of it, and people are pointing out that it's like, this is like the first time you have that sort of fantasy teen life. Like, this is the very first time that you have like, she's able to drive her dad's cool car every once in a while. Like,
just go to the beach. I don't think they tell anyone. They just, like, hop in and go.
Yeah. And then one of the reviews was, like, everybody wanted that phone. She had, like, a princess phone. Every girl was, it was, like, the biggest deal if you were a girl. Parents would allow you to have a phone in your room.
It's in her room, and she's on it. And, like, the scenes of her on the phone are very well done and, like, engaging in a way that's very, you know, like Clarissa at her computer.
About that really cinematic foot fetish shot?
Yeah, I noticed that.
That is absolutely, like, very clearly the director.
Don't speak ill of William Asher this way.
I'm sure. No, I mean, and we're not kink shaming here. It's just like, it's very obvious when you're like, what? Like, I've never seen. In a family style sitcom, remember, this is supposed to be for families. The same time as Beverly Hillbillies, they just have a solid 25 second shot of her feet.
She's like, because she's seated, she's on her bed and she's like seated, like she's like leaning up. And then she leans back out of frame and then puts her feet up on like the bedpost and then just like kind of like kicks them around. And the camera just stays on them, which is a very interesting stylistic choice. Yes. But also, it's a lot of feet. It's maybe the most feat I've ever seen on television.
I would love it if it turns out that there was just like a problem with the other footage, and they were like, I don't know what to tell you. We got to use the foot shot. This is all we can do for the scene.
That's like a very French New Wave to like do close-ups of feet rubbing together while like people are having full-on conversations. There's something very romantic. There's something very sexual about it.
Yes. Yeah.
But that's what I think the tone is crazy.
Not appropriate.
The tone is so crazy for the show because it has all those sensibilities. I'm guessing the writer had this mentality of like, let's go for it. And then I think you're totally right. I think the network notes came in and it just gets like watered down.
What premise did they put Sally Field in when they were like, well, we need to bring her back. She's a nun.
Literally.
Wow. Okay. So next scene is like all the family is like Gidget's not there. The family is that we get the weird sexual starvation. Will you eat a lot? But then this is another scene that I like. Gidget and wait, what is the friend's name?
LaRue.
So they come home from the beach. They walk straight to the fridge. They just like pull out a handful of like bologna, and Gidget just starts.
It's a great joke.
Just starts both eating it.
Well, she's talking. I think it's a great part. She's talking about how she doesn't think she'll ever be able to eat again. Like, I feel like I don't have an appetite at all. And they're eating like 2 pounds of cheese and meat.
Yeah, just a whole plate of just like cheese, just cold cuts. Yeah. Like both of them is housing cold cuts. It's great.
Well, I do think the whole series has a lot of like Gilmore Girl inspiration that I see in it, because the more episodes we watched, the more they ate. There was like food in every scene, and they were eating just giant portions, like drinking ketchup. It was wild.
Yeah. In the second episode, her dad comes in and is like, do you want to like, let's have a conversation over our 9:45 midnight snack. And then they sit down and he makes like a giant bowl of ice cream. And he's having a bologna sandwich, and
they get so excited about the conversation.
They get so excited, they forget that one is holding the maple, like one is holding the syrup that she's going to pour on her
ice cream,
and he's holding, she's holding the ketchup that he was going to use for his bologna sandwich, and he's holding the maple syrup, and then they pour it onto their scene. I don't know. I'm describing this.
No, but like that sounds a lot more like smart and involved than a lot of things that I would see on television at this time.
They were having like a lot of fun. There's a sense that, I mean, obviously Ruth, given her like credits, she must be just a fantastic writer, and I'm sure that
she was nominated for an Emmy for That Girl episode. So good job.
All right.
Get it, Ruth.
You mentioned Bewitch. I wanted to say it was filmed on the same lot.
Yeah.
And in the exterior shot to the left of her house is the Bewitched house, which means it is possible we're in the Ruth verse.
So for my book, one of the like main sources for my biography of Hayden Rourke is a man who he's now like 72, but when he was out of high school, he went to his library in Oklahoma where he lives, and he like found the addresses of all the movie studios and like for an internship, like wrote all of them. This is like 68, 69. Mm-hmm. And he got an internship at Screen Gems, and he worked in the makeup department. And so he was on Bewitched mostly, but he also did stuff on Genie, and that's where he met Hayden. Hayden would like take him out for hamburgers and like have like, it was just really friendly to him. But he talked about like he always wanted to meet Sally Field because he's like 19 and like Flying Nun is there. He's like, I love Sally Field. He says that he had a story about like there was one time where he was around a lot, and so he like it was feasible that like she definitely like saw him every day somewhere. And there was one day where he was like, I was standing outside and she pulled up. She had this like gorgeous like blue Mustang convertible, and she like motioned for someone to come over, and I immediately like just turned around and thought that it was someone else, and there was no one behind me. And then she just like drove away, and then he was like, I mean, I blew my shot with Sally Field. It's just so cute. He was so like,
I mean, we haven't talked about it, but she was pretty hot.
Yes. I mean, right? She was like a big deal.
Well, she was 18 when they filmed this, so we can say whatever we want about her. Yeah.
She is like,
no, but she does look extremely young. I mean,
but like the fact that we as a culture, I won't go too deep into it, aged her so quickly and like put her into this super weird category is very bizarre, because she definitely was like a heartthrob type. She was like a, I can see men like wanting to be with her and women wanting to be her situation.
Yeah, like it's like you're a nun now. You were too sexy as a teenager on Gidget. You are now a young nun. So the dad, the sister like finally has to tell the dad like about the sick and nothingness thing. But then he's like, how did you find this out? And they don't want to tell him. They finally like, we read her diary. And I love the fact that he then like ushers them out. He's like, that was not cool, dude. Like, yeah. Which I think was super nice. And then back upstairs, Gidget is upstairs dancing alone to records, trying to forget all of her problems.
And I love that they shoved the 60s music in there. They shoved the outfits and they shoved the music. It was great.
The dancing is insane. I mean, I am not a good dancer, and I would have crushed it back then if that's what dancing was.
Yeah. I mean, watch like some laugh in. It's just like, ooh, it's like full body, like herky jerk. It's so weird. I love it. So the dad comes in, and this is where they have the misunderstanding talk where he like finally has to bring up like, you know, are you sexually active? And she's like, does she think he's talking?
Are you kissing?
Yes, but I was going pre-network notes, I guess.
He knows that she messed up the Jeff relationship by saying she hate other people. And she's like, how'd you know?
Yeah. And then it comes out that like, someone read her diary, because he says sinking to nothingness, and she's like, wait a second, that is my phrase and my phrase only. No one else has ever used it. So, I mean, maybe that's why she uses phrases like sink into nothingness, because if anyone says it to her, she's like, clocked. I know you did it. I know you're in my diary, because no one else says that but me. And then she cries. She's up all night.
I mean, Brett, I know you're saying this is acceptable. It is insane crying. This is not sitcom crying. This is Sally Field's Oscar moment.
Yes, it is teen crying.
And that's why it's so funny. This is up against the Beverly Hillbillies. Imagine somebody sitting down, like the whole family sitting down, and somebody's trying to convince dad, let's watch this new show. And you flip over and, you know, the Hillbillies are doing hillbilly stuff. And then you flip over and Sally Field is giving the like performance of a lifetime cry.
Had a misunderstanding with her father over like intimate relations with a boy.
You might want.
Is that? Did you hear that?
No.
It sounds like. It sounds like we have an intruder, but it seems to be fine.
We don't. It's probably our chair.
Oh.
Chair.
We got a chair delivered.
We got a chair delivered.
We just wanted it right in the middle of Gitch.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Right, can you delete the rest of the episode, but just leave the part in where we talk about getting a chair?
Yes. This is now chair. Must have chair TV.
Well,
we've reached the most important part of the discussion for me.
Yeah.
Because the dad comes in, and the dad is wearing an amazing dressing gown that I want. It is silk with like velvet spots on it. It's like a burgundy red. And do you understand how many hours I have wasted trying to find affordable like robes and dressing gowns in quarantine? No, like no joke. If you want a dressing gown like that now, you are spending $1,000.
Really?
They are. If you want that, if you want one that is made of like not like a fucking like cotton or terry cloth kind of, you know, just run of the mill hobo bullshit. if you want something that's like nice and looks like you're a weird,
we're talking about like the sleep suit or whatever we call
Just like a robe, but like when they're fancier, they're called dressing gowns.
Oh, okay. Well, I was raised in the poor side of London.
But like, if you want one of those, it's going to cost $500 to $1,000. I mean, like, they are just prohibitive.
Listeners, subscribe to the Patreon.
Yeah, I should get a Patreon that just funds my, like, fancy sleepwear.
Join it silk robe level for
I found, like, there are pajamas that I've wanted, but it's just like I cannot justify paying $200 for pajamas. I just can't. 70 yes, 200 no. Is 70 a lot for a pair of pajamas?
Yeah that is, Brett.
Okay.
Whatever.
Is $70 a lot for a pair of pajamas?
No, you deserve it. You deserve
oh no, but not
you
for
want
you. I'm just
oh,
saying.
No, 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 no.
I mean, Rob, I would not allow Rob to do that, for sure. Whatever makes you happy.
I just remember, like, the one, like, a Christmas where I was, like, it was, like, 2 days before Christmas, and I was, like, oh, I want to have some, like, nice new pajamas for Christmas morning, so, like, yeah. It's too quick to order anything, so let me go to the mall or whatever. So I went to, like, Kohl's, because that's where I was, and it was just nothing but, like, fucking, like, Deadpool onesies. Like, you get, like, Deadpool onesies, Pikachu snuggies, like, plaid flannel pants, and I'm just, like, where is the class?
Yeah, you're too much of a classy man.
I am. Yeah, I'm just so I want this dressing gown, and then while he's in this handsome garment, he does the handsome thing of apologizing. Right.
Well said.
He's like, I didn't read your diary, but he also doesn't throw her sister under the bus.
Very classy. For someone it seems like they both think is pure shit. He is like, I don't want to get in the way of their sisterly relationship, whatever it is. Like, I want to protect both of them equally.
Yeah, it's really cool. But, like, she does infer, like, well, obviously.
She calls her a Telstar, which I've never heard before either.
Yeah, that's like a network, right? Or a satellite or something?
It's a satellite. Like, yeah.
So, like, they basically, like, so she tells him, like, well, he's leaving tomorrow. We've agreed that I can date. He's going to figure it out himself. And I'm like, okay, cool. And she's, like, kind of, like, excited that she, like, well, I really made my sister worried for a while. That's great. And then she says, like, what did she say? Something like, I don't know, like, what, like, her husband doesn't know anything. Psychologists all think that, like, sex leads to, like, starvation or blah, blah, blah. And it's like, sex only leads to babies. And, like, and then the dad is just like,
babies. She says, sex only leads to.
Oh, and then he.
And then he's like, I'm not listening to what sex leads. Like, they did not say babies, because I was like, is she implying something a little dirtier than that?
But I was just like,
censored version of what this pilot
this
was supposed
to be. This is a 15 and a half year old girl talking about what sex leads to with her father on television in 1965.
It's really impressive.
Yeah. But what does sex lead to? Because she never answered it.
But I want to stand by you guys, because you keep selling it like the show is so liberated. It's very confusing. This show matches
1965.
Matches like amazing. Yeah, but you're just, it's like so clearly that somebody came in was like, Ruth, this is great. But let's have, like, you know, the older white dad, like, you know, tell her what's what.
Yeah, he needs to have him on.
Yeah. Like, let's not, she's not ready to have sex, so we're just going to talk about, you know.
Yeah. The last moment is a bit of monologue from her that I really loved, where she, like, looks at the camera and she's like, I'm, like, really mature. Like, I wonder if thinking about stuff like this all the time makes me a philosopher. I hope not. I'm too tired. And I was just like, that is so teenager-y. I'm just like, I'm a real deep thinker. Like, I know what sex leads to. Love it.
But Sally Field is the reason all this stuff hits. I mean, she really just nailed it and like elevated what, you know, she took a lot of the stuff did get clearly got watered down, and she still elevated it and still gave it like a feeling of, you know,
realness, like, and like lived in and like.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell she's a star when you're watching this.
But who else was a star?
LaRue.
We're big fans of LaRue.
And the dad for Brett. I want to give some. So I found out that the dad and her had a really good relationship in real life.
Aww.
She said he was like a father to her. You know, they had like a father-daughter relationship in real life. And then her and LaRue are best friends in real life.
Still?
I would assume. I looked up LaRue. She like quit acting in like the early 70s, which some review is basically saying that like you'll notice a lot of actresses basically once they hit their like mid 20s or so. You could not be an actress and a mom. It was like, those are like, it was just very standard that you'd be like, okay, now you're like mid 20s if you want to have a family or whatever. I don't know if that's the case, but she was a drama teacher down in La Jolla. And like up until found an article in 2017, her name is Lynette Winter, and she directed Freaky Friday at the school that she taught at. I don't know if she's still teaching it. That was 2017, so probably not.
Oh, like the Disney Channel version? There was like a 2017.
I guess for the stage version of Freaky Friday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah. But I don't know if they would use her school as like location, so it could have been.
Yeah, it's possible. Wow.
Good for all of them. Yeah. How's Jeff doing today?
Jeff's in jail.
I mean, I don't even know who Jeff is.
I don't know who
John, I looked up John, and I won't go into it because it's really sad.
Oh no!
I'm
not going to go into it because it's really sad. Mm-hmm. But I did look him up because I was like, he's giving me Dick York vibes. And then I was like, I really like him. Like, it's not much, but I like him. And the internet agreed with me that he was like, him and Dick York had a lot in common. And he went on to do some other stuff and some Westerns and stuff. And then sad things happened.
Okay, I'm looking that up later. are y'all ready for some more must-have facts?
Yeah!
Sure.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow. Okay. So I don't know what the... Well, I said that earlier. I use my newspapers.com archive access to try and find, like, the specific Nielsen ratings for this week. Like, the full list, because sometimes those are published. It wasn't published for this week, so I don't know where it ranked. But I do know that it was 68th for the entire season. And it had, like, a 26 share or something. So, like... Big ratings today!
Yeah.
But 68th for the season, and like when you're only having like three networks, so like there are maybe only like 70 shows, so you understand. The top five shows of this TV season were the number five, The Thursday Night Batman. Number four, The Red Skelton Hour. Number three, The Lucy Show. Number two, Gomer Pyle USMC. And number one, Bonanza.
Great.
So yeah, that is not a landscape for a sexually aware, boy crazy, hyper emotional, ahead of her time, free thinking weirdo like Gidget. Who doesn't surf. Surf adjacent.
I looked up some stuff and I found that there were two Gidget board games. I couldn't find anything about the one Gidget board game, but there was a Gidget fortune teller board game and I was able to find the rules for it. I won't read all the rules, but I'll read what I at the beginning of them. It says, for two players at a time, Gidget and her friends enjoy predicting each other's fortunes using her special cards. And then it says this: of course, fortune telling predictions are never considered seriously. It's all in the spirit of good fun. And I'm like, they had to put that in the rules because either there's a card that basically says you're going to die, Or it is just like,
this is of the devil. This is a cult. So please don't worship Satan, obviously. Gidget wants you to worship the devil.
It's all a good fun.
I did find out that the original people that this is based on were Jews.
Aww.
Like, that wasn't like a mean Jew. That was like a yay Jews. And so very exciting.
Where's the Gidget? Jewish teen girl surfing in California? Where's this show?
There it is.
Let's bring it back.
Yeah. So the 80s. Oh, what?
Yeah, no, and put it on HBO so we can say sink into nothingness.
The real stuff. Yeah. The ABC Wednesday night lineup that this was part of is also evidence of how it definitely makes no sense. The night started off with like season 20 million of The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet.
Okay.
Which is the most 1950s squeaky clean. Then the Patty Duke Show, which is another like Screen Gems, William Asher, but that's.
Yeah.
It is teen girl having fun, but it ain't this. and then Gidget. And then something called an hour-long show called The Big Valley. And then Amos Burke's Secret Agent. And also, half of those shows are in black and white at this point. Gidget's in color. Weird. Like, this is a weird like transition season. But while I was searching for the ratings, I did find a review, like a little blurb for about the first episode of Gidget that was written by TV critic Jerry Coffey of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. And this is his little blurb, his little quick review. Gidget on ABC may find favor with teenagers and possibly some masochistic parents of teenagers, but it shapes up as a waste of time for everybody else.
Wow. I mean, not totally wrong.
Well, I think like this is, I cannot imagine being, this is a show, first of all, with like a female lead and then like a teen female lead that is also here to like talk about her feelings and emotions.
Yeah. And I'm like, the Patty Duke Show is about a teen girl, but it's still family sitcom time.
Yeah. You know? It's about her cousin who's like,
Yeah, and it what like clearly somebody at ABC convinced somebody that it's like, well, you know, teen girls like the Patty Duke Show, so maybe they'll like this afterwards. It's like, no, they're just because they're both teen girls, these are very different shows.
Right.
Well, and it's like if you have to. Well, I also don't know if they really knew the idea of like crafting nights of television that makes sense. Like, I don't think it really started happening until like the 70s with CBS's Sunday Night, that was, you know, All in the Family, Bob Newhart Show, Mary Tyler Moore Show, Carol Burnett Show, MASH, like that all makes sense.
Yeah.
But like Ozzie and Harriet, Patty Duke, Gidget, and then like a spy show, like
it just doesn't.
This is what we had left over. Yeah. This is the.
Did they not have? Like, did they not have like afternoon kids like programming in those days?
I think that. Well, I think like Bozo, like little kids stuff.
Yeah, little kids stuff. Yeah. But it seems like this would have crushed. I mean, this is Saved by the Bell.
Yes.
Like, you know.
Yeah.
Well, right now, there's so much sex-fueled teen stuff. I would say most shows that make it to air are sex-fueled teen stuff. Yeah. Like, the demo is there. The people watching TV are
sex-fueled. HBO Max.
Brett, can you check your email?
Uh-oh, you lied to me.
Wait, what? Ugh. Well, I mean, it's taking a while to load, so this is fun for the listeners.
well, let's fill the time with me telling you about a future episode.
We can tell you about more.
Wait, no, what is this?
Hold on. So, the Gidget episode that is most memorable.
Yeah, I think he opened the email.
I'm trying to. It's loading. I think it's because I'm running Zoom and my GarageBand. Okay.
The Gidget episode that's most memorable to me is when she takes like mechanics class at school and learns how to fix a car, and then she goes on a date and her date doesn't know how to fix the car, so she fixes the car for him.
I don't want Brett to read this script.
I was trying to kill time with my hilarious story.
That's because I can tell he's reading it.
Okay, all right, start it. Go for it, babe. Just do it.
All right, so Brett, you're going to play the dad. This is my interpretation of every Gidget episode. I've only seen 3 episodes, but this is what they all felt like to me.
This is the last episode.
Meredith is going to play Gidget. Brett, you'll play the dad. And I'll read stage directions and do any other voices.
Angel.
Yeah.
Gidget, what's this here? Gidget, what's this I hear about you and that boy at the beach or some beach-related activity?
"Oh, Daddy, his name is Jumpy Cough, which is a perfectly reasonable name given how everyone has a ridiculous name around here. He's a real cool head who hangs out at the beach and has a dog, which makes him different from previous guys."
Now, Francis, which is your real name in case anyone questions, I'm your dad.
He's supposedly 19, but looks to be about 52 years old.
Oh, well, that is normal.
He has gray chest hair.
Just be prepared. Dogs are a real responsibility.
Wait just a dingy minute. I'm not the one who has to take care of the dog, unless you mean Jumpy.
No, what I mean is, this boy may be nice, but if he has a dog, it might be hard for him to make time for you.
Well, that'd be real wiggy of him.
Oh, Daddy, Gidget could be in real trouble if this guy's dog is vicious.
Well, and that's an insane jump to make. Also, do you have a job or anywhere to be besides my home? Because you're always here, and I'm worried about you.
Yeah, Anne, and mind your own beeswax.
Well, also, owning a dog is some sort of sexually repressed or oversexed thing.
Shut the fuck up, John.
Yeah, John, nobody likes you, and psychology is a horseshit profession filled with quacks.
Yeah, the only real therapy anyone needs is a dad coming in to talk to you right before bedtime while wearing a dope-ass smoking jacket.
Ring, ring, Gidget answers the phone.
Hello? Oh, it's LaRue. Yes. Oh, dear. Well, okay.
She hangs up.
And what was that about?
Well, it sounds like you were right, Dad. Dumpy is moving away to a place that's better suited for his dog. I guess we'll never see him again.
Well, I'm always right. You women can have spunk and joke around, but in the end, you're always wrong, and older men always know the right answer.
Yeah, I'm a real dingbat, I guess.
Well, I, for one...
Shut the fuck up!
Oh, John!
You deserve everything that's going to happen to you? I don't know. I'll find out later.
One person's interpretation.
That's the lost episode. But rating-wise, on IMDb, 42 Gidgemaniacs rated this a 7.3 out of 10. Does that sound right? Would you go higher, lower, the grand scheme of television?
Oh.
On the scheme of television? Well, I think that, like, you know, television has categories for a reason. So in teen comedy, I would say, yeah, it's definitely a 7.
I'm maybe giving it a 6.5 because I feel if we're just looking at the pilot episode, because I think that the show expands to probably an 8.5.
Mm.
And I think this is just a jumping off point for them.
I'll give it an 8.
Ooh.
I also like giving high numbers. No, yeah. Who had the must see performance in this episode?
Well, I mean, it's like, how can you not give it to Sally Field?
It's Sally Field.
Yes. So she crushes it.
We liked her. We really liked her.
I do think that
an hour and 10 minutes without making that joke. Yes.
We were great.
I do think LaRue crushes it. And there's a world where, in my opinion, you see this show skyrocket. If it's placed in the right time slot, gets the right demographic, the show does super well and LaRue gets her spinoff.
Yeah. It is so wild because, like, she goes on to write on That Girl, and on That Girl she dates Donald for like 5 years. They are in a committed relationship. They didn't get the marriage. They got engaged by the end, but they didn't really want to do like husband wife stuff really, like, for the show. They wanted to like keep them that, but they never live together. They definitely never have sex or talk about it, and I'm honestly trying to picture them ever kissing. Like,
but did they give blowjobs?
They definitely gave blowjobs off camera.
Okay.
But it is crazy that she goes from like writing this on Gidget, and then maybe she's like, I learned my fucking lesson.
Yeah.
Anne Marie is staying chaste. And lastly, must other people see this episode of television?
I would say this episode offers nothing, so you might as well skip it, because it's definitely considered to be the worst of the episodes.
I would say it is must have seen television, because I think that, like, all of us recognize how it inspired so many television shows that are out today and a landscape for like a demo that wasn't even being looked at the time.
Yeah, so. I mean, I haven't seen any other ones, and so if they're better than this one, I'm very excited because I thought this was spectacular. I feel like, I honestly, like, you know, it's always like, is this a good episode to start with? I mean, I think obviously I started with it, and it was, I like a follow-up because she directly told me what was going on.
Right.
God, yeah, just in terms of, I always expected Gidget to be just like a doofy, cutesy little show with absolutely no teeth and no humor, really, just like nonsense, basically. And the fact that this actually had like a very clear point of view that definitely was like pushing buttons and making the suits mad. I applaud it.
We're sinking into nothing.
Yeah, Gidget don't give a damn about her bad reputation. So where can people find y'all on the internet if they want to talk to you about beach movies?
Oh, no. You can find me on Twitter. My just search for Rob Stern on Twitter. At the Rob Stern.
I'm Meredith Hackman on Twitter, and it's at @big_mare. And I have a dumb Instagram where I find terrible internet ads and I make fun of them, which is called Best Place to Cry at Work. Probably because I made it when I was feeling emotional at work. That's the internet for us.
Slide into those DMs. And that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guests, Meredith Hackman and Rob Stern, for dropping by and talking about Gidget with me. Next time, I'll be discussing I don't know what, but it's probably going to be June and Pride Month, so get ready for a whole month of me just being very gay and talking about very gay things with very gay people. Get into it. Until then, I want to hear from all of you. Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram, and let's talk about sitcoms. I'm probably not going to be posting original content there because I don't have a lot of time, and thinking about it stresses me out, but I will respond if you talk to me. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter @BrettWhite. Please rate and review this show in Apple Podcasts. 5 stars. Blow those 1-star hosers out of the water. read the words that are at decider.com. Thanks to Acast for hosting this nonsense. Thanks to all y'all for listening. And you know what? I will see y'all it next time. And I might take a week off. I might have earned a week off, and then we'll be back like at the very beginning of June. The very beginning of June. Not like June 1st, it depends on what Wednesday falls on, but like every week in June. Okay.
You hear that, listeners? Get off his back.
Yeah, come on. No, honestly, no one cares. And I feel guilty for no reason.
I care, Brett.
Care!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.